actually giving a talk which overviews three papers. I'm going to go really quickly. Please stop me if I lose you at some point. Okay. And so let me start with just an overview. I know not everyone in here is an AGN person, so I'll very rapidly go through our unification paradigm as we know it. We know there's a supermassive black hole, we're pretty sure, 10 to the 6 to 10 to the 10 solar masses, depending on what kind of object. We know there's an accretion disk, probably a molecular torus. And this system produces a relativistic jet. And on the top, I have the radial loud version, which is a big, 100 kiloparsec and more scale jet. On the radio quiet side, we maybe have no jet or very small wimpy jet. Broad line region, close into the black hole, narrow line region outside. And then this can explain this whole family of objects that we see. So everything from blazars to various types of radio galaxies to super galaxies. So some of the open questions that we still have, how does the jet structure relate to the morphology that we see, like in radio maps? Can we connect this to the site of the gamma ray emission, which is what we care about so much with Fermi being up right now? And what is the role of the black hole mass in an accretion rate in producing what we see from the jet? And particularly my thesis and the papers that I'm discussing today, what can we learn from studying populations? What can we learn about the jets? So, again, quick overview. For blazars, we are talking about the synchrotron peak, the low energies, and the inverse compton peak, which is at high energies. We're going to be looking at both of these today. And the chief observables is roughly where these peak. So the luminosity of the peak and the frequency of the peak. And this is the FSRQ and VLX spectrum, but we've already gone over that quite a bit today, so I'll skip that. So the original blazar sequence, of course, was that there was an anti-correlation between the power of the source. As the power went down, so did the peak, and it shifted to higher energies. We've revised this now to the broken blazar sequence. And this is sort of the main plot from my first paper. And let me explain, because there's a lot going on in this one plot. So what we have here is, again, we're still looking at the peak luminosity, which is the peak frequency, and we've colored the sources based on their low-frequency radio power. So this has been scaled to the jet kinetic power using the estimates that we get from galaxies imaged with Chandra. You can see in the X-ray images there's bubbles from the jet. You can actually measure these and estimate mechanical energy. So taking that, that's some work that's been done recently by Kevin Noah and Pierzon. We can actually estimate the jet power just from the low-frequency radio. And actually, the next, this picture shows a little more clearly exactly what we're doing. So you have this isotropic extended emission from the jet that's been built up over the lifetime of the source. It doesn't vary. It's deep. And you can either, if it's a source like this, you can very easily pick it out at low frequencies. Or if you have VLA imaging, you can pick up a point down here by actually subtracting out the core. So the core would be the jet emission that's variable on top, and you can pull that out, and you can measure the jet power that way. So what we found, what we expected, rather, was that along the sequence, we thought the sequence was still in play here, we would see sources departing along lines as they were misaligned. So you take a source, you misalign some line of sight, and it's going to drop in luminosity. What we found instead is that there's this VL shape that Justin was talking about. Also interesting is that if you look at this, there appears to be sort of two branches. So we follow this branch and we see only low power objects. Along the other branch, branch A, we see jets with all powers, but particularly all the high power objects are over here. And so these are all the FSRQs that we normally see, plus some VLX, which we'll talk about momentarily. And these are mostly VLX. Down here we have radio galaxies. So this is what I was talking about when I asked Justin about why there's no radio galaxies here. So if you go in with high resolution imaging, HST, Chandra, you can figure out where the jets and radio galaxies, even though they're misaligned, are peaking, and you find them only at very low frequencies. So what we have here is also the debeaming track. Basically, from a jet at 0 degrees here, follows all the way down to a radio galaxy misaligned, and for a single Lorentz factor simple jet, you would just drop the thing. 1/4 is roughly the ratio from luminosity to frequency that you expect if you just have a simple jet. If you have something that's got velocity profiles, either a decelerating jet or something with like a spine sheath, what happens is that as you misalign the jet, the plasma that's radiating has a different Lorentz factor. So you'll see the luminosity doesn't drop nearly as quickly as the frequency, and so you actually see something much more horizontal. We think this matches well with the data, but it's not conclusive. So The other thing that we find is if you measure the core dominance here, so that's the difference between the jet and the extended, you get roughly a measure of the alignment of the source. So you can imagine that if this jet is more aligned, the isotropic emission doesn't move, but this whole component moves up. So higher core dominance is greater alignment to the line of sight. I'm just pointing out that whenever I talk about L extended or L kin, we're talking about the 300 megahertz. So the two things that we're finding to unify sort of all of these blazars and radio galaxies into one picture is that you can take the low frequency radio and you get the jet power, which tells you quite a bit about where the source is going to end up on the diagram, and also the core dominance, which gives you the angle, and what you'll find, and it's not shown here because I can't put four things in one plot, the core dominance increases as you go up here and as you go up here. So basically you see exactly what you would expect. Core dominance is highest here and decreases, highest here and decreases. Okay. So takeaways are weak jets are consistent with velocity gradients in the radiating plasma. Here's some references for people who've done the theoretical work, Marcos being one of them. Strong jets are completely consistent with dropping quickly, roughly 1 to 4. Many BLX are in the strong branch, and we'll get back to that. And ISPs, so those are intermediate synchrotron peak BLX, those are actually more misaligned HSPs in this scheme. So that's actually a really important prediction, and we should have lots of people going and looking at those and making sure that that actually works out in practice. Most importantly, there's not a continuous sequence, and that's sort of the summary of the first paper. So moving on to paper number 2, which Marcos and I are writing now. So we know that jet power or kinetic jet power is important, the angle is important, and perhaps accretion rate is important. So we need a third thing to explain exactly what's going on with the two branches, right? So I went in, this is actually updated data that I'm working with now. I have two FGO sample blazars, and I'm going in and getting the synchrotron peak, which I completely glossed over earlier, but this is pretty data-intensive effort. So you know exactly where the peaks are. We're not guessing with indices or anything like that. And I've got black hole mass estimates coming from basically anywhere I can find them. I just take an average reverberation mapping, velocity dispersions, whatever. And you can separate these into two definite groups. So the reason I did it this way is I want to make sure I'm definitely getting jets belonging to this group, because here's somewhat ambiguous. Do I have misaligned weak jets? Do I have misaligned strong jets? I don't know. So I have two populations, and if I look at an estimate of the mass accretion rate, which you can take, just take the kinetic jet luminosity again, scaled from low frequency radio, divided by the Eddington luminosity, which you measure from the black hole mass, you see a divide. So the strong jets are clearly over critical, we think there's a critical value of about m dot of 10 to the negative 2, and that coincides pretty well with what you see for this population being higher than that. So this would be efficient accretion, radiatively efficient versus radiatively inefficient accretion on the weak jet side, and that makes some sense with other predictions that we've seen. So, excuse me, following that up, we want to see if this actually makes sense and see if we can come up with some analytical expressions for what's going on. So we label these inefficient and efficient. This is our hypothesis. So the idea is in the inefficient case, we have no broad lines. These things give us IC from SSC process. We assume a constant Lorentz factor with jet power, so it doesn't change as you change your jet power here. And with a few other assumptions that you can follow through, you get that the peak goes with the peak frequency. So you get sort of a something that looks like a mini sequence here. So we're increasing our peak luminosity and decreasing this way. And along that track, you have increasing accretion rate and increasing jet power. And eventually what happens is you reach the critical level of the accretion rate, and you're going to jump over to the efficient branch. And so that's the efficient case. And you can actually get a similar type scaling, similar arguments. We have slightly different assumptions, which is that the jet power scales with the Lorentz factor squared. And also that you have the, but you end up with the same, exact same scaling. So you end up moving, sorry, there's zero. You end up moving from here, and same exact thing happens. You increase your jet power, and you increase your accretion rate, etc. So the reason for these boxes that have been laid over the plot, if you look at these weak jet sources first, and you divide them up into bins. The idea being that we think the topmost bin, right, is going to be the highest jet power sources, and that's actually what you see. So as you move down through these bins, even though we have pretty sparse statistics here, you see a big shift in what jet powers are actually seen. So these down here are populating the lowest jet power, weakest sources you can find. Similar idea with the strong branch. If you go from here along this end all the way up here, we expect the jet power to increase. And you see that here we have, in the C box, we have quite a few lower power sources, and these slowly disappear, and we start populating higher power. So it's not quite as dramatic. The other thing that I want to talk about is about the BLX, and I completely agree with what Jomi and Padavani are saying, which is that there are fake BLX in the strong branch. So these are characterized by jets that are just exactly like the FSRQs. The reason we don't see their lines is because they're swamped. And you can actually do a quick little statistical study of this. If you take your, this is sort of your aligned sequence, right? So we have a broken sequence, and this is the aligned sources. If you measure from where a source is to where it would be, just debeaming the thing or rebeaming the thing back up to sort of the aligned point, you can actually see that as you get further and further away from alignment, so this is just following a 1-to-4 path, your fraction of BLX goes from 100% at the most aligned all the way down to 0% down here. So the BLX fraction makes sense with the more aligned sources are swamping out. You see the exact same thing if you look, if instead of doing the estimate of the Doppler factor, you just look at the radio core dominance, which is another way to look at the alignment. You see the same thing. The BLX fraction is high at high core dominance and drops off. So moving to the third paper, what can we learn from Fermi? So Justin actually has a much nicer version of this. Mine's from the 1FGL. But these are FSRQs, and these are BLX. And you can see that this is sort of roughly like the inverse Compton sequence. So you have high luminosity, low peak, and low luminosity, high peaks. This is the gamma-ray photon index roughly tracks with your peaks. Interestingly, so not only do we see sort of an aligned edge here, who knows for sure if it's doing an L or not. We have a lot more going on with different kinds of radiation mechanisms, of course. What you do see is that the FR1s that we think go with BLX are appearing at much lower peak frequencies, similar to the FR2s. And that's exactly what's happening in the synchrotron envelope. So we've got straight down debeaming of for FR2 type sources, and we've got this horizontal track for the FR1 sources. So it's directly analogous. Another thing I wanted to point out is, since a lot of people are looking at variability studies and trying to track BLX versus FSRQs, another thing you might look at, which is more interesting, tends to put a lot of order, is the radio jet power. So this is the gamma ray band luminosity versus the core dominance. More aligned sources should be at this end, less aligned down here, and it looks like a complete scatter plot, until you actually sort the sources by their jet power measured from the low frequency radio. That you get perfect striation. So sources, luminosity and gamma ray is pretty much exactly predicted by both the core dominance, so it increases slightly as you align the source, and the total power radiated. So that makes sense. Okay, I'll very quickly go through this. Some of the debates that we've heard are about SSC versus EC. So what can we look at in the population to determine which is happening and what kind of sample. So synchrotron self-Compton upscatters synchrotron photons. The IC peak is a copy of the synchrotron. So what happens when you align the sources, the peaks just move together, right? We don't change Compton dominance. With external Compton, of course, you're going to see a different scenario because the external Compton peak has a different beaming pattern. It goes to the delta to the 5 plus alpha. So you should end up with a change where as you align the source, the inverse Compton peak goes up. And what we found, summarizing very, very quickly, is that the highest power sources, so these are kinetic powers greater than 45.5 and more, have a correlation between the radio core dominance, the alignment going to the right, and the Compton dominance. So this would be LIC over L synchrotron. So you get this nice correlation, which to me immediately says, okay, we have external Compton going on in high power jets. Not a surprise, we have suspected that for other reasons, but it's nice to see it on a sample basis. To explain exactly what's going on here, this is actually Fermi weekly data matched with the weekly OVRO telescope, so 16 gigahertz. So I actually matched the radio and the Fermi observations to get a nicer correlation here. And we can actually look at the slope to see if it makes sense from what we expect. For external Compton, just plain external Compton, where you have one Lorentz factor that's working at both the radio and the gamma ray energies, you should expect a slope of about 2 over 3, 2/3. We actually get something much steeper than that, something like 1.2 or more. So we think that's consistent with what you would get if you had Lorentz factor of the core being smaller than what you're getting for the gamma rays. So I'll just leave my conclusion slides up here. In fact, actually, I have a pictorial version, which is much faster. So this is what we expected from the old blazar sequence, and what we got instead is something like this. So we have a broken sequence where we have these weak, radiatively inefficient accreting black holes producing these decelerating jets, and then we have something else going on over here with the strong jet. So, am I out of time?
How do you define the core fraction? Would you use PLA or PLBI?
For the core dominance?
Yeah.
It's actually, I've got about 200, 300 sources, and it's all different. So some of them I've actually gone and found the steep spectrum and extrapolated it back to 1.4 gigahertz. But I'd say about 75% of them have VLA. And so we have both. You kind of can find a way to actually match the whole spectrum. And, but it's at 1.4. Mostly, well, part of the reason that we have velocity structures in the weaker jets already was because we were having unification problems with the FR1 jet luminosities not matching what you would expect from just normal beaming. They were overshooting what you were getting in the blazars, right? So the idea was that you had some kind of jet that was decelerating. And then I think there was also the issue of what sort of, we were not measuring fast speeds for these things. You look at them at the LBI and they were just not moving. So you needed a way to explain that they were TEV emitters but also didn't appear to be moving very fast. So. Oh, how do you, in fact, we sort of agnostic about that. You could still have velocity structures in the strong jet, but just not the same way that you have them in the